From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for July 31st, 2016, the last day of July and the gateway to August. Time to grab the Sunday paper, get that cup of coffee, and we'll do our best to get your Sunday and your week off to a good start. Well, Shwani, you mentioned about Lollapalooza, and wow.
Yeah.
The crowds have just been amazing downtown.
They certainly have. I was driving yesterday afternoon, ended up actually headed west on Randolph to Michigan Avenue. Coming off Lakeshore Drive, kind of got rerouted, as you might guess.
I bet you did.
But I have to say, the crowds that crossed with the light, and everybody was behaving and crossing properly there when the light was green for them to cross Michigan Avenue. Wow. Wow. Just a solid mass of humanity.
Wouldn't you like to be the water vendor or something? Just to stand in the middle of the street. And
just like these guys that are on the water coolers, right?
Yeah.
Ice cold water for a dollar.
Wow. I mean, it just, the traffic downtown, too, with all of those street closures.
Absolutely.
I don't think you can get far enough west to go north and south.
No.
If that makes any sense.
It's pretty rough. And you know, to make matters that can be worse is that I saw two or three cars that were off to either side of the road with their flashing lights on, but it wasn't just to have someone rush out of the car for, you know, a couple of seconds. No. They were parked there.
Yeah, right.
They were parked.
That'll be the new thing. We'll have valet parking.
And we wonder why people have, shall we say, quick tempers.
Yeah. Well, it's a great thing for the city. I mean, I can only imagine the tourist money that's come in over this weekend, just because everywhere you look downtown, there's people everywhere. And then, you know, we've had a couple of good baseball series going on. I mentioned last Sunday after the show, I joined some friends down.
You had a good afternoon over there.
I had a very good afternoon. Yeah. I actually caught a foul ball.
That's fantastic. I saw that picture. That was just amazing.
I caught a foul ball. And I have to admit, I did it goalie style. I ended up blocking it with my knees and trapping it with my hands. And I had a nice little...
Did you have your face mask on?
I had a nice little wrist bruise that I was showing off to everybody.
Yeah.
I gave the ball to my friend Daryl, and I actually ran into Daryl's wife yesterday, and I said, did Daryl get a case for the ball? Because Daryl's been, he literally was talking about how he'd been to like 10,000 baseball games, and I believe him, and he never caught a foul ball.
I never have either. Sam, have you ever caught a ball at a ball game?
I've caught about four.
Have you?
Yes. Three of them were all me. One of them ricocheted off of like some guy. And then I picked it up. You know when somebody takes the brunt of the hit?
Right.
And then you just pick it up?
Yes.
Like, yeah, I got it.
He took it for the team and you got the ball.
Yes. And I wasn't going to give it up. By the way, you should have signed the ball and gave it to him.
No.
Yeah, why not?
I don't sign things. I mean, come on. But I have to tell you, though, that's the first time I've held a baseball in a long time. And they're really small. Well, I mean, you know,
softball. You just played 16-inch softball.
Yeah, exactly.
You never played hardball.
No, I played, a long, long time
long
ago.
Long time ago,
but,
sure.
Yeah, really small. So I checked to see if they
make it sound like it's a golf ball or something.
Well, it is small.
5 ounces.
And
is that all it is?
Wow.
Yeah, 5 ounces.
Wow.
But I said to Daryl's wife, I said, did Daryl get a case for the ball? And she said, I have to tell you, when we brought it home, I guess he put it down on a table or somewhere, and Apparently, Riley, their dog, found the ball.
Oh, great.
So it's mostly intact, I was told.
Have Riley sign the
ball. So if anybody's going to sign the ball, Riley ought to sign the ball.
Riley has put his imprint, shall we say?
Yes. Teeth marks would be correct, yes.
Congratulations to Daryl. He's a great guy.
Oh, and well deserving of it. And yeah, it was a great time at the ballpark. There's no doubt about it. And I guess it's kind of fitting that the City Series kind of split equally. Although, I still don't know what to think about these Cubs. Arrieta pitched. I will tell you what a beautiful Cubs game yesterday. If you just sorry about the end, but you know you go through. I think it was seven innings where Seattle. Had a no-hitter against us. Arrieta only gave up two hits against Seattle. I mean, you know, that's some. I like to see hits and home runs and all that, but when you get two pitchers really on the mark, it was outstanding. I just wish we could have come away with the win yesterday, but we're back at it today, and I guess the Sox are playing the Twinkies today, so. All kinds of stuff going on, and it's been kind of nice to watch some baseball because with these political conventions and the hours. Now, I did not go to Philadelphia; I went to Cleveland, but I still had to keep track of everything that was going on in Philadelphia, do some morning reports, and then you have these speeches that never seem to stop and go on until 11 o'clock, 11:30 at night, and. It's been great to just kind of have baseball as kind of that nice...
Your diversion?
Nice summer relaxer kind of thing.
Yeah. You know?
But I like I said, I am worried about the Cubbies. I really wish... am I being premature on this, Sam, or what?
They have the most wins in the game, 62 wins. They have a 6.5 game lead. Why are you nervous? Is it just like
the
annual
nature,
doubt that creeps in?
It's the nature of being a Cubs fan. That's all. It's the natural pessimism that comes with it.
It was interesting, though, yesterday because Hector Rondon, who is now supposedly the eighth inning guy, right? They acquired Chapman from New York. They brought Chapman in with two outs in the eighth inning, and the first batter hit a two-run double. So the question is, well, why are you bringing him in the eighth inning and then having to rev him back up in the ninth? But the first hitter he faced, two-run double, and that's the first time he's blown a save with the Cubs. So
yeah.
That is making people a little bit nervous.
Well, I was going to say, that's not helpful. I mean, and especially after, his debut performance where I think he faced three batters and two strikeouts and a ground out. I mean, that's why you get nervous, He's the three-out guy, not the four-out guy.
I will say one thing, though. When he's on the mound, people put their phones away, people are paying attention, and they're looking at that radar gun.
Yes, indeed.
Because he is sizzling balls in there. 103 miles an hour, Swanee. Can you hit that?
No.
And I can't.
103.
And I can
no way.
I can attest that ball is very small.
No, I have to tell I know what I would do. I would hit the dirt very quickly if I saw something like that coming at me at 100 miles an hour.
Well, and
I just would.
Joe Maddon was right to credit the Seattle hitter that got the two-run double because he said, when the ball is coming at you that fast to be able to, get it out to get a bat on it, let alone, throw it out into a deep left center field and get a double out of it is fantastic. I mean, that's talent and a lot of credit. But, wow, I mean, it's just a sizzling fastball. Well, let's go Cubs. Let's get it back today. Dave's here to keep us up to date on all the news. Sam's here with the latest sports. Producer Jasmine is here to field your phone calls. And we're at 312-981-7200. That's the same as our text line, 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com, The Sunday Spin. We're also on Twitter, @SundaySpin. Engineer Bob is here to help be a tour guide for the people looking for Grant Park for Lollapalooza. And remember, you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com, and you can also get our podcasts at iTunes by searching for Rick Pearson. Well, coming up, we've got another great show. After Dave brings us the 7:30 news update, we'll be speaking to my good friend Tony Arnold. Tony covers politics for WBEZ-FM, and he's just back from Philly after 2 weeks on the road. He did the both conventions back-to-back. After the 8 o'clock news from Dave, we'll be speaking to another good friend, Michael Golden. Michael is the author of Unlock Congress, and he has plenty to say about the past two conventions in the past 2 weeks. And then after the 8:30 news update, we'll be joined by Christopher Mooney. Chris, as you know, is the director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois, and he'll be here to recap the Cleveland and Philadelphia conventions as well. That's all coming up, but we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to The Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, and it's time for our weekly spin through national politics. Well, Democrats had their disturbances between the Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton supporters as the Democratic convention opened, but if there was a true sign of potential unity, it came with First Lady Michelle Obama's opening night convention speech. It's been widely regarded as one of the best convention speeches.
That is the story of this country, the story that has brought me to this stage tonight. The story of generations of people who felt the lash of bondage, the shame of servitude, the sting of segregation, but who kept on striving and hoping and doing what needed to be done so that today I wake up every morning in a house that was built by slaves. And I watch my daughters, two beautiful, intelligent black young women playing with their dogs on the White House lawn. And because of Hillary Clinton, my daughters and all our sons and daughters now take for granted that a woman can be president of the United States.
So then you go to the second day of the Democratic convention, and helping to quell any more disturbances was the fact that Bernie Sanders helped to make the nomination of Hillary Clinton by acclamation.
Madam Chair, I move that the convention suspend the procedural rules. I move that all votes cast by delegates, be reflected in the official record. And I move that Hillary Clinton be selected as the nominee of the Democratic Party for President of the United States.
So now we move to day three of the convention, and that's the day, the convention traditionally featuring the passing of the baton, now from President Barack Obama to Hillary Clinton. And Obama had no hesitation about going after the Republican nominee, Donald Trump.
The reason he'll lose it is because he's selling the American people short. We're not a fragile people. We're not a frightful people. Our power doesn't come from some self-declared savior promising that he alone can restore order as long as we do things his way. We don't look to be ruled. Our power comes from those immortal declarations first put to paper right here in Philadelphia all those years ago. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that we, the people, can form a more perfect union. That's who we are. That's our birthright, the capacity to shape our own destiny.
So then we move to day four, closing night, and still the most talked about speech, due in part to Donald Trump, came from Khizr Khan, and it's still being talked about because Khan is a Pakistani, a Muslim immigrant, and the father of a slain U.S. soldier who was posthumously awarded the Bronze Star for his duty in Iraq. Khan delivered a very powerful message against Donald Trump.
If it was up to Donald Trump, he never would have been in America. Donald Trump consistently smears the character of Muslims. He disrespects other minorities, women, judges, even his own party leadership. He vows to build walls and ban us from this country. Donald Trump, you're asking Americans to trust you with their future. Let me ask you, have you even read the United States Constitution?
And at that point, Khazer Khan pulled out a copy, pocket copy, of a U.S. Constitution. And now we have Donald Trump reacting to this, saying he has sacrificed, Trump has sacrificed by creating jobs. He criticizes the mother of a fallen American soldier for not speaking, and he indicates that that's because she's Muslim and maybe she wasn't allowed to speak, even though that she did do interviews later and said it was because she was still grief-struck about the death of her son. These issues that Trump has raised has prompted some Republicans to further question whether he has the temperament to be president of the United States. Here's Trump being questioned by ABC's George Stephanopoulos.
There was a man named Khazer Khan speaking at the Democratic Convention. His son, Captain Humayun Khan, was killed serving in Iraq. And he had some very tough questions for you. He said you wouldn't have even let his son in America.
He doesn't know that. I saw him. He was, very emotional and probably looked like a nice guy to me. His wife, if you look at his wife, she was standing there. She had nothing to say. Maybe she wasn't allowed to have anything to say. You tell me, but plenty of people have written that. She was extremely quiet, and it looked like she had nothing to say. A lot of people have said that, and personally, I watched him. I wish him the best of luck, George.
What would you say to that, Father?
Well, I'd say we've had a lot of problems with radical Islamic terrorism. That's what I'd say. We have a lot of problems where you look at San Bernardino, you look at Orlando, you look at the World Trade Center, you look at so many different things. You look at what happened to the priest over the weekend in Paris where his throat was cut, 85-year-old beloved Catholic priest. You look at what happened in Nice, France a couple of weeks ago. I'd say you got to take a look at that because something's going on and it's not good.
He said you have sacrificed nothing and no one.
Well, that sounds... who wrote that? Did Hillary's scriptwriters write it?
How would you answer that, Father? What sacrifice have you made for your country?
I think I've made a lot of sacrifices. I work very, very hard. I've created thousands and thousands of jobs, tens of thousands of jobs. I think
those are sacrifices?
Oh, sure. I think they're sacrifices.
That's Donald Trump speaking to George Stephanopoulos about his comments regarding the parents of a slain Muslim American soldier who was on duty in Iraq. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. Up ahead, we'll be speaking with Tony Arnold, the great political reporter at WBEZ-FM Chicago and Illinois Public Radio. Later in the show, we'll be speaking with Michael Golden, the author of Unlock Congress. And also, we'll be talking to Chris Mooney, my good friend, who's director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. I want to go back for a second, back to the Democratic National Convention on the final day, where it was time for Hillary Clinton, the first woman to capture a major party presidential nomination, to give her acceptance speech. And her speech was aimed at displaying optimism in contrast to the acceptance speech that Donald Trump made a week earlier in Cleveland.
Our country's motto is E Pluribus Unum. Out of many, we are one. Will we stay true to that motto? Well,
We heard Donald Trump's answer last week at his convention. He wants to divide us from the rest of the world and from each other. He's betting that the perils of today's world will blind us to its unlimited promise. He's taken the Republican Party a long way, from morning in America to midnight in America. He wants us to fear the future and fear each other. Well, you know, a great Democratic president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, came up with the perfect rebuke to Trump more than 80 years ago during a much more perilous time. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
That's Hillary Clinton's acceptance speech in Philadelphia on Thursday night. Well, joining me here in the Allstate Showcase studio is my good friend Tony Arnold, political reporter for WBEZ-FM Chicago and Illinois Public Radio. And Tony does not look the worse for wear after having done both conventions back-to-back. Welcome to
Thanks.
The show.
Yeah, no, I got some a little bit of rest, a little bit.
Now, I'm surprised that I didn't hear, I guess because she attributed that to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, that she was accused of plagiarizing.
Yeah, right. Yeah, she. There's a footnote there that says, like,
"That's right,
right." It's sourced.
Well, so having been in the action, I was in Cleveland and got to come home. You had to go right off to Philadelphia.
Uh-huh.
Compare and contrast what you saw at both conventions.
When I was there, I had an eye specifically toward the Illinois politicians and delegates for both conventions. So, I think my overall takeaway from Cleveland was meeting a lot of newcomers to the political process who are Republicans and got asked to be involved in politics for the first time. So they're just trying to figure out how this works. Not just the national convention and watching the speeches, but also just interacting with some people who are elected or hold elected office and what that's even like. That was kind of my takeaway from Cleveland, was just looking at all the newcomers who are loyal to Donald Trump or support Donald Trump, interacting with people who, a lot of Illinois Republicans who aren't actually on board with Trump. Then compare that to Philadelphia with Democrats, where
the delegation size is almost three times.
I was just going to say, yeah, like the Democratic delegation is gigantic compared to the Republican delegation in Illinois, and I think and that has to do with just how blue Illinois is, but also I think watching there the political newcomers who are Sanders supporters interacting with Clinton supporters, there was still, you did hear some of the tension, but it wasn't to the same degree that was there in Cleveland. The people who supported Trump versus those who don't, and then those who support Clinton and those who don't. It was just a little bit different, where I think in Cleveland, like, you actually had people a little bit more divided, just not interacting at all. And in Philadelphia, it was more, you know, the Sanders supporters were telling me, this is just, it feels like everyone here is on board with Clinton, and we're here to crash the Clinton party. That's how it was kind of described to me in a summary here from the Sanders point of view. And then they would say, like, in a degree we know that Clinton's going to get the nomination, but still we wanted to see more from the party about bringing the Sanders people in. And so when you're here and it's all Clinton buttons and Clinton swag and everyone here is just talking about Clinton and not really acknowledging Sanders, that feels like a little bit of a burn. I don't mean that
aptly put.
It just feels like they're kind of ignoring us or putting us off to the side. So they didn't feel totally inclusive. That said, there wasn't as much, I don't think that there was as much of a divide there as there was in Cleveland.
But on that first day, or frankly, it was the weekend going into that first day, where that's where the WikiLeaks release of the DNC emails came out. Debbie Wasserman Schultz gone.
Mm-hmm.
A pronounced effort by the party to steer things Hillary Clinton's way. That couldn't have been necessarily a great way for these Bernie Sanders supporters who, yeah, they know what the scoreboard's going to say at the end of the ball game, but they wanted certain acknowledgement by the party, and then you have these emails thrown at you.
Yeah, and you saw that on the floor of the convention center, not just among Illinois delegates, but from other states as well. On the final night, I was there for the Clinton speech, and just when you're looking around the arena, Illinois' delegation was sitting in front of California's delegation.
And California was a noisy bunch.
Very noisy, and they were booing a lot of speakers, and in the lead up to the final night, they were booing mentions of Hillary Clinton. They had, on the final night, just a gigantic banner that said hashtag WikiLeaks. There were signs all over saying walk the walk or no TPP, which are anti-Clinton signs.
The Trans-Pacific trade pact.
Correct, yes. And then when I was talking to people, again, it was a lot of the Sanders people were saying, you know, we're here with our signs, and then the Clinton people are putting up their signs around ours to try to block them from TV cameras so that if you're watching at home, you wouldn't necessarily see the signs that the Sanders people were holding, these signs that I'm describing. And so there was just some frustrations that, again, they weren't being welcomed here to, I guess, protest the person getting the nomination. That was kind of the gist of it. And then you had this whole kind of rivalry between the Illinois delegates and the California delegates because of their proximity to each other on the floor, where when California delegates would boo, you'd have kind of these establishment Democrats like Cook County Commissioner John Daly, you know, saying you don't boo, we're here to support these people, you don't boo them. And so you had some people being frustrated from the Illinois delegation with the people that from California who are there, and even Speaker Michael Madigan, the chairman of the Illinois Democratic Party, said that the California delegation was in disarray compared to the Illinois delegation, where you had the Sanders, the leaders of the Sanders campaign in Illinois doing a lot to try to bring the two sides together to support Clinton to end up defeating Trump. And Clem Balanoff, who's one of those leaders of the Sanders campaign in Illinois, Madigan went out of his way to address Clem Balanoff and say, you know, how great he's been at trying to unify the two camps.
Well, I think that was reflected too the on Tuesday or the second day with the roll call, where Balanoff got to announce the Sanders numbers for the roll call.
Yeah, when they go through each state, right? It goes Alabama, and I can't do them all in order.
was going to be your trivia test this morning.
I know,
yes.
I can't do it. When they got to Illinois after each state, yeah, they had Madigan introduce the state to the world. You have 90 seconds to say something about the character of Illinois Democratic Party, and Madigan acknowledged Dick Durbin, and he acknowledged Tammy Duckworth in that 90 seconds, and then passed the baton to Clem Balanoff to say we nominate so many votes for Bernie Sanders, and then he passed the baton to Hillary Clinton's childhood friend Betsy Eberling to say, okay, now this is Clinton won Illinois, and this is how many votes we have for Illinois. So it was this moment where Illinois was one of the few states to actually acknowledge and have a Sanders supporter announce the votes, which Clem Balanoff, the person who did that, said later after that that the reason that was important wasn't just symbolic. It's not just a nice gesture. It's also meaningful because what they're doing is trying to, you know, unify to beat Trump. There's a goal here. There's a practical thing here. And Balanoff's point was, this isn't just something that's nice. It's actually we're going to take this to go toward.
And it's an acknowledgement of the work that the Sanders people put in.
Right.
But now
right.
It's a matter, you know, and then that's the standing story, I think, is how do you harness that? Can you harness that?
Mm-hmm.
Can Hillary Clinton attract that energy, that fervent support? And I think that's a standing question.
Yeah, and from the Illinois delegates that I talked to who are Sanders supporters, there is still some resistance to get on board with Clinton after 4 days of being in the city and being you know, talking about how important this was to come together and to beat Trump. There's still some resistance, but they weren't saying no, absolutely not. No way am I going to not vote for Hillary Clinton. There wasn't, I didn't meet too many of that. There was much more of a genuine kind of wrestling with the idea of having to vote for Clinton, but not necessarily no. Like there was at the end of Cleveland, where I was still hearing
from
Never Trumps within the Illinois Republican delegation.
We're speaking with Tony Arnold. He's the political reporter for WBEZ FM Chicago and Illinois Public Radio, back after a long 2 weeks on the road. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio. This is the Sunday Spin. Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio with Tony Arnold, the political reporter for WBEZ. We touched on the issue of those DNC, the WikiLeaks email release and the DNC looking to help Hillary Clinton against Bernie Sanders. But very interesting statement, because they're all interesting statements these days out of Donald Trump that came after that. And basically saying that, the Russians, even though he's not sure they did it, but if they did hack the DNC, then they probably hacked Hillary, her emails, and her private email servers.
What do I have to get involved with Putin for? I have nothing to do with Putin. I've never spoken to him. I don't know anything about him other than he will respect me. He doesn't respect our president. And if it is Russia, which is probably not, nobody knows who it is, but if it is Russia, it's really bad for a different reason, because it shows how little respect they have for our country when they would hack into a major party and get everything. But it would be interesting to see. I will tell you this. Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press.
There is Donald Trump once again, but later he said that was just a joke. That's just sarcasm. Even though his connections with the Russians, despite his denials, is becoming an ever-growing story. And now you have with the issue of going after the family, the parents of a slain Muslim American soldier. People are going, oh, well, here's a new misdirection play to take everybody's mind off of Russia. It's just this ever-going, ongoing saga, and I don't know where this ends. I mean, you saw on the Twitterverse all weekend denunciations of Trump by some major Republican characters, although we haven't heard from House Speaker Paul Ryan. We haven't heard from Senate Republican Leader Mitch McConnell. But just when you think he can't say anything more condemning, he does. It's almost a modus operandi.
I think I saw that his vice presidential pick too, Pence.
Mike Pence, the Indiana governor.
Take those questions to the campaign, not to me.
Which I thought was kind of interesting, since he's half the campaign ostensibly. Right. But so don't ask me; ask the campaign about that. We were talking during the break about how the difference in covering the two conventions, and you know, as you started out talking about the differences, it also makes for differences in how you cover it. The fact that, for the most part, in the 69-member Illinois Republican delegation, as you said, a lot of first-timers, a lot of, first-time getting politically active. And so you contrast that with an Illinois Democratic delegation, though split, you know, sizably between Hillary Clinton supporters, Bernie Sanders supporters. For the most part, those are all people that have political experience.
Right, and in Cleveland, when you look at the Illinois Republican Party, they're very, very open that they're in this. They're changing. They're trying to grow here. I don't think that's out of line to say. And so to be there and pretty much all week, you heard some frustrations from people that Governor Bruce Rauner who's kind of the face of the Illinois Republican Party now. He
calls himself the leader of the Republican Party.
He says that himself. And so he skipped the convention, and so did U.S. Senator Mark Kirk. And as a result, there were very few elected Republicans there who were there to compliment Trump or to talk highly of Trump. For the Illinois Democratic Party, there were a number of elected Democrats who are there to support Sanders or elected as Sanders delegates, mostly lower rank or down ballot people, state representatives or aldermen,
right?
Local, yeah, not statewide like Treasurer Mike Frericks or Attorney General Lisa Madigan or something like that. So there was a difference there in terms of when you talk about establishment Republicans or establishment Democrats, basically elected people who've been around for a while. There was a difference there where a lot of elected Republicans weren't on board with Trump, but who were there. But then there were still elected Democrats who were on board with Sanders.
Yeah, and it was interesting, and I had Mark Fratella on the show last week, and he's one of the more pronounced Trump delegates from mm-hmm. Elmhurst, and he actually talked about how he thought that the state Republican Party, and going in, there were questions because of Bruce Rauner not being there and Mark Kirk not being there, that he had questions about just how much the establishment of the Republican Party would work to support Donald Trump. And in the end, he said he was very pleased with the way the party apparatus moved. But even with the party apparatus saying we're for Donald Trump, I still think there's a degree of energy there, in much the same way that there are questions about a degree of energy, you know, among Democrats for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I think you saw that in Cleveland, where the chairman of the Illinois Republican Party went out of his way to talk about how the party is supporting the nominee and supporting Donald Trump. And so then you had any frustrations was not so much with the party, it was with individually elected officials
who were elected for as Ted Cruz delegates or who were mm-hmm. elected as John Kasich delegates, for
yeah.
example.
And what I heard a lot from a lot of the newcomers at the Republican convention was we wanted to see our ideals, our candidate, basically Trump, reflected in the Republicans that are elected. Like, this is an electoral process here, and we want to see Rauner and Kirk and other people get behind our candidate because they're elected to represent us. It was almost like we're not electing you just for the governing side of things. We're electing you for the political side of things also. That's something that I heard from quite a few Trump people, actually.
So on Thursday night, so you have Hillary's speech.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's leaving town. What was the volume of Kumbaya?
There were some Sanders supporters were wearing glow-in-the-dark yellow shirts to stand out in the crowd so that you could see them. And there were clusters around the arena. When you're on the floor, you're just kind of it's just a first-person experience. This is what I saw. You saw clusters of glow-in-the-dark shirts because it's kind of dark in the arena itself. And in the Illinois delegation, I could probably count on one hand how many
of those
shirts that I saw. Now, does that mean that everyone who wasn't wearing the shirt wasn't on board? I don't know. But by and large, it's not. I got the sense from a lot of the Illinois delegation that they were leaving there okay with supporting Clinton. That there weren't too many people saying the Bernie or bust crowd, that kind of.
But at the same time, though, part of the whole convention idea is when the delegates leave and go home, their job is to help rev up the people back home for the ticket. And to me, that's still the open question.
I agree with that. I was in between the Iowa and Illinois delegation, which were next to each other, and I did see an Iowa delegate walk off in the middle of Clinton's speech. Just one. But that was something that I had heard earlier in the week from some Sanders delegates in Illinois that they were either going to
turn their back
or have kind of a silent protest or not show up, skip the speech altogether, which they might have done. It's hard to do a tally of that in the moment. But there was if they did do that, they were quiet about it and not noticeable like some of the people from California, for instance, who are very vocal.
Just in the seconds we have left in this segment, obviously a dominant conversation was 2018 and the Illinois race for governor.
That dominated it the whole week, yeah.
And no clear answers.
No, but you get a sense of who it, these types of things. You get everybody, every big name Democrat in one room, and you get a sense of who has the power, who wants the power, and who thinks that they have power than they don't. And so,
I like that last part the best.
Yeah, and so you saw all sorts of people talking about 2018 in the race for governor. What I didn't hear much about was 2019 in the race for Chicago mayor, which actually kind of surprised me a little bit. But there was a lot of names being thrown around for potential Democratic nominees for governor, including Senator Dick Durbin, Chris Kennedy of the Kennedy family. Ed Burke said you should be talking about Valerie Jarrett running for governor. So those are the kind of some of the probably the three big names that came out of the week.
And the scene of Chris Kennedy addressing the delegation breakfast and then basically trying to get in an elevator that doesn't work and chastising reporters for trying to ask him questions. I'm not sure where that learning curve is right now.
I think he's learning what it's like to interact with the press who wants to hear from him if he's going to be a real candidate. He gave this...
The point being real candidate after he's been basically floated by gossip columnists for
right.
many years.
Right. His name has mostly been in gossip columnists. That's where I've seen his name mostly as a political reporter. That's where I've seen most of his... I don't see him giving these speeches
in very
much at all.
Public forums, right?
Yeah. And so... it was when he left, after he gave the speech where he was very critical of Bruce Rauner and very complimentary of labor unions, he left and tried to avoid this whole cluster of reporters and TV cameras who were there waiting for him to just gauge his interest on how seriously are you considering this run. So he goes straight to the elevator. Well, then he gets chased by a bunch of reporters who cram onto the elevator. So many get on that the doors won't close. The bell starts ringing, and he's saying to Mike Flannery from Fox Chicago, "Have you no decency? What have you become?" And then he just leaves the elevator and then he kind of meets with a few reporters in the lobby of the hotel one-on-one later on and basically says that he didn't appreciate, he felt like he was being bullied. The press, you know, for our part, we did this with everybody else there who's including
Speaker Madigan.
Including Speaker Madigan. So this is not like a unique scenario to him, but to Kennedy, but if you don't address a whole cluster of reporters who are there waiting for you, well, you're going to get followed. There's a different way to handle that, I suppose.
Tony Arnold, political reporter at WBEZ-FM and Illinois Public Radio. Thank you so much for getting up with me this morning,
yeah.
And thanks so much for rehashing your last 2 weeks.
It's a pleasure. Thanks.
You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's The Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. 8:07 on this Sunday morning. It is time for the second hour of your Sunday Spin for July 31st, the last Sunday of the month, as we kick off August. HBO has this great show called Last Week Tonight that's hosted by John Oliver. And John Oliver used to be on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart and now has his own show. And you see this every 4 years where campaigns play various music at rallies. And then you see the, now on social media, Twitter, but it used to be, you know, statements from the musical artists saying, "Hey, we don't want you to play our song. We didn't give you permission for that." And so last week's host, John Oliver, got a group of musical artists together, Usher, John Mellencamp, Josh Groban, Sheryl Crow, Cyndi Lauper, Michael Bolton, Heart, Imagine Dragons, and they had one theme for the politicians: stop using their songs.
Yes, turn on your laser light show. Fire up your confetti machine. Bring out your smiling backdrop of ethnic leader-verse teens.
Stop using our music. That's a one and only rule. We didn't write these songs to make your campaign stop seem cool.
Don't use our song, 'cause you use it wrong. It might seem appealing, but you're just stealing.
Don't use our song, it just seems wrong. By the time this tune is through, you'll be lucky if we don't sue.
Don't use our song, no.
That's licensing. You gotta call my publisher, okay?
You always take our music out of context anyway.
Why would Reagan be playing Born in the USA?
It's about Vietnam.
If I wanted to sing and not get paid, I'd be on Spotify.
Don't use our song.
That's a bit of Don't Use Our Songs from last week tonight from John Oliver and HBO. And I thought that would be just such a great introduction for my good friend Michael Golden, the author of Unlock Congress and co-founder of 1 Million Degrees, who's joining us here in the Allstate Showcase studio. And you know, given you got these conventions back to back, and all of the rhetoric and insight, I just thought a little bit of music would break things up a little bit.
It reminds me of 12 years ago, 2004, on the John Kerry for President campaign, and I was his communications director in Missouri, one of the supposed swing states. And the senior staff of the campaign would actually send out emails. What's your best song for this event, this spirited, you know, this sort of atmosphere? Because they kept using the same old songs again. And right. I noticed the other night when President Obama came in to speak at the DNC, and with that huge ovation, that they chose one of my favorites for this campaign stuff that they used so much, which is City of Blinding Lights by U2. And obviously there's more of these artists on the left that don't mind. And then you hear in the news, there's just fewer musicians, or at least famous musicians, complain when those on the right use it, and then it becomes a storyline, right?
Oh, exactly. And truly, you know, when you're out there on the road every day in these campaign forums, you almost become a nerd to the music. And in fact, it's like when you hear the end of rally cue up the music, it's like, okay, pack your bags, time to get on the bus for the next trip to the airport kind of thing.
If they play that, this is my fight song one more time for Hillary. I don't even know the name of the artist. I'm too out of the loop. It's a Katy Perry, of course, right, who played at the convention. Right. But I'm not even saying it's a bad song, but I've heard it so many times with her walking in that's driving me nuts.
Get used to it. Well, you know, I want to talk to you first about the story that's in the news right now, and that's the Khan family, who Donald Trump basically saying that Mrs. Khan, I've been told by people that she was told not to talk. Another comment that he made too was when Khazar Khan accused him of not reading the Constitution, and Trump's response was he has no right to say that. And one of the more interesting things I saw on social media was Mo Alethi, my friend who's now out at George Washington University, responded, well, yeah, he does have a right. His son died for that right.
Well, not only does he have that right, he actually has an empirical basis in it. If somebody refers to Article 12 of the Constitution, you actually you have a factual background to accuse them of not having read it. I mean, someone asked me yesterday, what do you think were the – name the two most powerful speeches from the whole DNC, which is very difficult to limit it to two. And I kind of had to divide it. Well, do you mean – the headliners, or do you mean everybody else? Because if it's everybody, and maybe including the headliners, Mr. Khan's speech was, I was blown away. I think most people were.
Well, it was something you didn't expect.
Not only did you not expect it, not only did he have the unparalleled, except for Donald Trump, everyone else in America, I think, realized he had the moral authority to have the right to say that. But then the way, this skilled way he brought out the Constitution, and I think I read that actually that was no gimmick either. He carries a pocket Constitution. I have one of those. Super nerds have those.
And actually, I think he has some kind of a scholarship program or something.
He's a Harvard lawyer, someone else told me.
But everybody in that scholarship program gets a pocket copy of the Constitution.
Right. Well, you did give me an opening here by bringing up Trump and his knowledge or lack of knowledge. And I don't know if people saw this, but in the last, I think, 24 to 36 hours, the Houston Chronicle followed the suit of the Washington Post in already disqualifying Donald Trump from its editorial board submission. Basically, effectively, they're endorsing Hillary Clinton, only the third time, I believe, they've ever endorsed a Democrat. And just one paragraph, it's one of the clearest paragraphs I've read in a year about this, if you don't mind. The ed board said, quote, any one of Trump's less than sterling qualities, his erratic temperament, his dodgy business practices, his racism, his Putin-like strongman inclinations and faux populist demagoguery, his contempt for the rule of law, his ignorance is enough to be disqualifying. His convention speech comment, I alone can fix it, should make every American shudder. He is, we believe, a danger to the republic. And I just bring that up because you don't – that's the Washington Post and the Houston Chronicle. The Houston Chronicle is, you know, not compared to a lot of papers, not some liberal screed. And to disqualify someone 100 days before the election because of their judgment of his character, I mean, they don't even talk that much about the issues.
Well, character, I mean, character matters.
Yes, right. But usually people are given a chance, a major party candidates, they're excused some of their, you know, it's not like Hillary Clinton doesn't have skeletons too. They're all over the place on national television every day. But, you know, those are seen, at least by some of these ed boards, as errors in judgment versus a man who's, you know, done these things that are still shocking to people, including what you started off with, what he said about Mr. Khan. I was just listening to it before I came into the studio, some of the things that Trump said yesterday. It's just shocking to me that an adult person could say that about a family that lost their son, much less lost their son taking, how he phrased it, 10 brave steps he didn't have to save other lives.
In serving in defense of this country.
It's amazing. It is.
We're speaking with Michael Golden, the author of Unlock Congress. I'm Rick Pearson. We're here in the Allstate Showcase studio. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson from the Chicago Tribune, and joining me here in studio is Michael Golden, the author of Unlock Congress. And we're talking about post-convention and just the daily Donald Trump. I mean, it's almost like you could do a whole newspaper versus everything. It's almost like he has to have the last word.
Almost.
It's just he can't be trumped, as it were, even though he digs a deeper hole on some of this. And, you know, all campaign season, over a year long, everybody has thought, oh, well, now that's going to be the one that gets him.
Right. And people have also thought, well, now he's going to pivot. That word's overused.
Well, right.
Or change or modify. And I think the irony is this. The real irony of this race is, at least so far, we have 100 days so it could change. But to your point, Rick, the irony is that he created this larger than even his larger than life image was by speaking and saying the things he's done in this campaign that have shocked people and inspired a lot of voters, right? He won a record number of Republican votes, at least in the primary. But the thing is, you can see when he's on that teleprompter, which is very rare, like at the RNC, he's not comfortable with it.
Right.
He's getting a little better at it, but he doesn't sound like himself. And Trump is somebody who really, he says this himself, he feeds off the energy of the crowd. And by the way, if you notice, if you really watch one of his rallies in full, a 30, 40-minute rally or whatever, you'll see he baits the crowd. He throws stuff out and he asks a question mark with a lilt in his voice till he gets the reaction he wants. And then he drives it home. You know, he goes, right? Right? And so the thing is, when you behave that way for a year and you get the positive reinforcement right. of voters, well, why would he? And by the way, first of all, I don't think he thinks he should change strategically. But even if he thought so, even if he agreed with his advisors who are saying to him every day, look, you got to get swing voters in these states. You can't. Your voters only get to vote once a piece. But even if he agreed with them, if he changed his whole rap, no pun intended, RAP. If he changed his whole rap in these rallies, then he'd look like a phony.
Right.
It's not him.
But at the same time, so we've got the flap with the Khan family. You've got him accusing Hillary Clinton of trying to rig the debates.
The commission set it up more than a year ago, right?
Even though the commission, and then he tells George Stephanopoulos in this interview on ABC that he got a letter from the NFL saying that the league wasn't happy about the scheduling in conflict with some Sunday or Monday night football games. And the NFL says, we never sent him a letter.
Right.
You had him.
It's actually a believable excuse. That's actually somewhat believable that the NFL wouldn't want to slice off its, you know, you could, that's more.
But they didn't send a letter.
I know.
He said
I got
a letter.
I'm saying that of the things that he says that aren't truthful, that one is actually rational.
And then there was a story that when he was in Colorado Springs, he and his entourage were stuck in the hotel elevator or whatever going to this rally, and the Colorado Springs Fire Department helped get them out of the elevator. And then he goes on at the rally to condemn the Colorado Springs Fire Marshal for stopping people from coming into the rally because of fire safety rules.
Right. Well, he didn't he say this in his book in the 80s? He called it truthful embellishment. He said that's part of his strategy. You know the old expression, can't beat him, join him? Well, Trump, actually, the genius that he has as a candidate or as maybe as in success in business is he takes self-promotion to a whole nother level. It's like he creates a self-fulfilling prophecy. He pushes these things that sound like it's okay to be on board and that he's way down the field from where he is and you better jump on, you know, jump.
Right.
You can't beat us.
Over.
Right, join us
yeah.
or you're going to get run over. And he knows one mode, which is to pound. I mean, I've never met a person, much less a candidate, who had trouble saying, I'm sorry about something, anything.
Right. Or who has acknowledged a mistake.
Right. It's sort of a human thing.
let's look at the aftermath of the Democratic National Convention now. And, you know, so much, truly, it was in some respects similar to the Republican National Convention in that the questions of unity. And,
right.
And, you know, here on the Democratic side, it's like questions of transference.
Right.
And I still think that's going to be the standing question until Election Day is whether the energy, enthusiasm, excitement is there for Hillary Clinton, spawned by the work of the Bernie Sanders campaign.
Yeah, no, look, I've made no, certainly in things I've written, I've made no secret of the fact that I favor Trump losing. From a summer ago because of just his behavior. Even though the book, thank you for mentioning, Unlock Congress, is nonpartisan, you know that, you've read
right.
it, it's structural problems that hold back our legislative branch in the system. So I say that by way of saying that the Bernie Sanders folks, I think Bernie Sanders is going to work his heart out over the next 100 days, and I really mean it, not just because he said he would, but because he wants to be a chairman of the budget committee or one of the large committees. You don't get that unless the Senate wins, unless, you know, and if you did, if you don't have a president from your party in the White House, you're not going to get much done anyway. So it would really be all for naught. And I think he'll, as you say, the transference will be, he'll be making that case, I think, more and more to his folks. I don't think it was the right place to make that practical case at the convention. He did what he could. I'll tell you what, though. I'd be interested to hear what you think about this. I was astonished to hear the Bernie supporters booing even the president a few times, but the former president Clinton and Hillary Clinton, whether you like her or don't like her, this was 2 days after the roll call. They had their shot, and their own candidate decided to put the votes in her column. That they had to have, that the Clinton folks had to go as far as to have their whips on the floor, yelling Hillary or USA every time the Bernie people spoke up and interrupted the main primetime speakers. I was really surprised and sort of saddened, regardless of party. I mean, the process is over. I didn't support Bernie or Hillary in the primaries. You know, I supported Lawrence Lessig, a quite serious guy, right, that most people don't know about, and he didn't make the debates. But I gave up on Lawrence a long time ago. And as soon as that roll call was done and the nomination was complete, I was really surprised at that. And it was really disappointing, I thought. But I think that those folks are going to come around because it's working against their own purposes. At some point, I know how it feels. I've run long shot campaigns, most of mine. I know how it feels to lose. I really know. And there is no worse feeling. After a year of 70, 80-hour weeks or whatever, it's brutal. But then, you know, when Gary Chico lost to Barack Obama in a 7-way primary, and we didn't even come, you know, nobody came close to Barack at the end, but when he was a U.S. Senator, we got behind him and supported him for U.S. Senate and then for the presidency because we believed in him more so than the other choice, Alan Keyes and then John McCain. So I think these folks, it made me feel bad.
Well,
I don't know how else to say it.
On the Daily Show, Trevor Noah was now taking
right.
over, and they had a couple of reporters out on the streets interviewing Bernie or bus supporters,
right?
Basically saying that, well, you know, Bernie Sanders has basically said vote for Hillary
right.
Clinton, or it's going to be Donald Trump. And one of the supporters they talked to said, well, that's not the question. That's not the question you should be asking. And so
what is the question?
And the reporter said, what is the question? And the response was,
it's crickets.
Yeah. So, but here again, on both sides, you have this issue of, well, you know, they're not my candidate. They're not my candidate. But if you're not,
that's not how our system works.
But yeah, it comes down to,
right,
you know, it's either Hillary or it's Donald Trump.
And actually, the second irony, I guess, of our conversation is that if you ask Bernie Sanders, you don't even have to ask. Donald Trump stands for, outside of possibly the trade issue, everything he's done in his professional life, set aside his family, is at cross purposes with everything Bernie Sanders has stood for as an independent senator from Vermont, carving out that independent space and speaking to a socialist democratic right. viewpoint. It's not even left of center. It's way left. So the idea that out of spite you would or anger or disappointment that you would vote for Trump, which I don't think many of them will, but stay home, which helps
Trump, is the real concern.
Oh, right. That's the real concern. I don't think it's going to happen. And the funny thing is, even though Hillary and Bernie were much further apart ideologically than the back then Senator Obama and Senator Clinton were in 08, there's more Democrats in poll after poll that are with Hillary Clinton than there were Hillary folks for Obama back
right.
then. So, and there's another sort of irony that there's not that much to worry about right now. But in what could be a very close election, you can't leave anything to chance. You got to get that number. If you're the Democrats, you have to get it as high as possible. And so does Trump. He's got a lot of work to do with the Republicans.
Absolutely, absolutely. Michael Golden, author of Unlock Congress. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. I appreciate the conversation as always.
Always a great way to start Sunday. Thanks, Rick.
You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking to my good friend Christopher Mooney. He's the director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois as we continue our recap of the Democratic National Convention, the back-to-back conventions of the Democrats and Republicans, and the latest from Donald Trump.
Now the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio. And joining me here is Chris Mooney, who's the director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. Chris, thanks very much for joining me.
Hey, my pleasure, Rick. If I wasn't here, I'd be listening like everybody else.
Well, so. I appreciate that very much. I wanted to play a cut. Something that Michael Gold and I talked about last hour about how Trump kind of feeds off the energy of his audiences. Mm-hmm. And that kind of is what continues his style of rhetoric. And this is actually Donald Trump in Davenport, Iowa, reacting to the DNC speeches, the Democratic Convention speeches, including, he doesn't use it by name, but he's talking about former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who he terms as little, but this is Donald Trump.
I wanted to hit a couple of those speakers so hard, I would have hit them. No. I was going to hit them, so I was all set. And then I got a call from a highly respected governor. How's it going, Donald? I said, well, it's going good, but they're really saying bad things about me. I'm going to hit them so hard. I was going to hit one guy in particular, a very little guy. I was going to hit this guy so hard his head would spin. He wouldn't know what the hell happened.
And that's Donald Trump from Davenport, Iowa rally out in the Quad Cities. That is part of the campaign, an essential part of the campaign to kind of incite his supporters.
Well, you know, I thought a lot about this, like most people have. His candidacy is so unusual. And the one thing that it sort of reminds me of is we were just talking about the Jay Giles Band. Okay, Jay Giles Band, rock blues band from Boston in the 70s. And a rock band, that's what he kind of seems like to me. He's feeding off the audience. He'll give them whatever they want. I don't know that he's thinking. But if he gets a response, he'll follow up. Maybe you think of more like jazz. It's call and response with the audience, you know. And I'm often wondering if he really, you know, thinks about the particular thing he's saying other than he's getting a response out of these people. And he's really good at it, you know. There's another thing you might think of as sort of a preacher, right? He's saying something, he hears people getting into it, so he goes back with it. And he enjoys the repartee with the audience. And, you know, who wouldn't? Everybody's cheering. It's great. I'm a great, you know, they're yelling. They're saying how great you are.
Well, and politicians have big egos, and this feeds the ego. I've got a text that it says, Rick, your discussions about Trump fall flat. Most voters are not interested in the day-to-day exchanges about him, as well as the press analysis. If Trump is tied with Clinton in September, expect a Trump landslide. What do you think?
Well, this guy's probably smarter than I am. I have no idea what's going to happen. This is, I gave up predicting what's going to happen in this election a long time ago.
But do you think people don't care about these, like, for example, this latest flap with the Khan family and the parents of a mm-hmm. slain U.S. Army officer in Iraq, a Muslim American, and Trump kind of just doubling down on this?
Yeah, you know, most Americans, in general, Americans don't care much about politics. In general, people don't care much about politics, right? And you know, this one I think people are potentially paying a little bit more attention to because, you know, Donald Trump brings in this sort of reality show factor. It's, you know, it's entertaining. Now we've got a head-to-head set up, and it's going to get pretty intense over the next few months. But what matters is not necessarily the individual people, the voters that are watching from time to time. It's two sets of people who are paying attention. Number one is you guys, the media. You'll pay attention. You'll find out what seems to be the telling issues, and then report that and kind of condense down the hours and hours of stuff to the key issue or the key points that are being made. But also the other side. And probably listeners have seen what I think is a pretty effective commercial by the Clinton campaign already, where she basically let's go to tape,
right,
and see what he says. And it's just, you know, when, you know, little pieces here and there, you add them all up and you put them together in 30 seconds, pretty powerful.
But his supporters stay I mean, he doesn't lose any support. And as we've seen throughout, you know, since June of a year ago, when you think he says something that, you know, that's it. There is no kind of carryover.
Yeah, that's true. You know, he seems like the Teflon candidate. But, you know, again, we don't know what's going to happen going forward because this is completely, you know, it's uncharted territory. There's really, we've not had a candidate like this before. We've not had a candidate, in a sense, like Hillary before. I mean, especially, you know, her background, the fact that she's a woman, the fact that she was first lady, the fact that, you know, she's had all these offices and been so well known for, you know, 25 plus years. So we've got, you know, we don't know what's going to happen right now. And you know, maybe little pieces won't affect, you know, people hear a little thing here and there. But the accumulation of the stuff that he says might have an impact, or...
Oh, well, the same with her, the accumulation of her background.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, if, you know, if even more stuff comes out about her emails or more hacking or whatever. I mean, it just one day, you know, it's fantastic. It's kind of like the Cubs this year. Every day is something new. It's always interesting to watch because, you know, it's not boring. Okay, it's not boring.
It's not boring. That's for sure. We've got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Yeah. Good morning, Rick. Just a moody question for you regarding just political messages. Donald Trump appears to be capturing some of the cynicism relative to politics. So my question is, and also from Hillary Clinton running from a party that's within power, how is she really going to be able to sell people on optimism and hope, you know, like President Obama? But I really think, and particularly in those Rust Belt states, that it really be critical that Donald Trump's message, because for some reason, this negative message, and he's holding on to it. That's my thing, the contrasting of the messages. And I just think it's going to be really a challenge for her, particularly with her very low approval rating to sell people on the message of hope and change. So that's it. Thanks, Rick.
Thank you, Ron.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Ron. You know, whenever you're the party of the incumbent, especially if it's been for two terms, you really have, you know, you're sort of backup is up against it, and it's difficult to get to win that third term for a party. The only time that's really happened since World War II is Truman did it in 48, but aside from that would be George Bush, and so it's very difficult to do, especially with a candidate like Hillary, who's been around a long time. She's not exciting. I mean, that was the thing about Obama. One of the things that was in his favor was here's this new, fresh face. He's great orator. He's got this soaring rhetoric that really was inspirational. Hillary doesn't have that stuff.
Well, and he was kind of still much an outsider.
Definitely
on the
an outsider.
On the national level.
And you could, and he didn't have this record that you could really, you know, pin him with. He could define himself. Hillary has a hard time defining herself because, you know, we all know who she is, just like we all know who Donald Trump is, even though I think Donald Trump is showing us some sides of him that we didn't necessarily know about before.
No, that's... Well, this thing is just... I mean, you don't know which way it's going to go.
Absolutely. I think it's really going to be... It might be a blowout either way, or it might come down to the wire. It might be one of these things where, you know, we go into December and the Supreme... Who knows? I mean, it could be anything.
We're speaking with Chris Mooney. He's the director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Good Sunday morning, 8:48 on this Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio, along with Chris Mooney, Director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. This is your Sunday Spin. And Chris, I had to tell you, I kind of had that bit of a flashback moment. I was in Iowa in 2004 for the Iowa caucuses, and watching Howard Dean, now, you know, at the Democratic National Convention, kind of doing his reprise of the of primary night in Iowa from 2004.
This race is going to be won on the ground, and it's going to be won in Colorado and in Iowa and North Carolina and Michigan and Florida and Pennsylvania, and then we're going to the White House.
Except he missed the yeah,
no screaming. You know, that was a sound that probably no human voice could actually make, I believe.
And you know the great story behind that is anybody that was in the gymnasium where he did that didn't hear it. Didn't
really?
Hear the screech. But it was the way it came across
up
the
on
microphones.
The mic. I see.
Yes.
The magic of electronic voice.
Well, before we went to break, we were talking about how who knows how this thing is going to shape up. And one of the things that I've kind of thought about is, you know, God help us, we have some kind of a incident like occurred in Nice, France, like a week before the election. I mean, God help that it would ever occur anyway.
Yeah.
But if something like that happened on U.S. soil, that, you know, while we have some fears now about terrorism, domestic and from abroad, but that kind of issue would give Trump the election.
Well, you know, in a normal year, that's true. Republicans typically poll better on national security issues, and Democrats typically poll better on bread and butter issues. But again, this year, who knows? And I think it might have something to do with the reaction. I mean, because you can make an argument the other way, the idea that Trump is he's a wild card, doesn't really know what's going on and never had any experience, where you've got Hillary, who is the steady hand as she's trying to portray herself. And I think, as in all these things, especially with Trump, we have to see how he reacts. And, you know, what does he do? Does he go off the beam, or does he, you know, get serious? That might have as much to do with it as just the fact of having some kind of a terrible tragedy.
But the rhetoric, though, that we've heard from him so far, and even in response to Khazar Khan's speech to the DNC, was that, as he told George Stephanopoulos, was, well, but it's the issue of Islamic terrorism, and it's a growing problem, and it keeps happening, and we have to do something about it. Now, you know, whether it's as Trump wants to do, as others have called for at least some kind of suspension of refugees from Syria, or Trump ban Muslims from coming in, whatever. I mean, there definitely is a fear card to be played.
Oh, yeah, and he's definitely playing it. I think Clinton is working on the other side again with the sort of steady hand argument. And to some extent, the October surprise, so to speak, that came from, if it comes from the world, again, some terrorist attack, say, I think part of it depends on when exactly it happens. If it happens 2-3 days before the election, that will probably favor Trump more than Clinton.
Yeah, I can almost see like a 9/11 type unity. But unity, we got to go get somebody.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And usually that's kind of how it happens. I mean, immediately, you know, we circle the wagons, rally around the flag. And then as time goes on, different approaches can be expressed and people can think about it in different ways. And sometimes it's still rally around the flag. Look at 9/11. We went on and we passed the Patriot Act and we went and we invaded Iraq. It had nothing to do with the 9/11 and all that. But that depends on leadership and you know, who's driving the boat.
So when you look at coming out of the Democratic National Convention and, you know, you have Hillary, the known quantity, but you have some of these Bernie or bust people that are pretty much, they're never Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
But do they get into the game or do they sit out? Is it going to be something like, you know, there was talk of that on the Republican side, too, if you're a never Trump person, do you just sit there? Because, you know, we know what the options are. on both sides. And, yeah, they're not exactly popular options.
Right. And actually, that's to my way of thinking, and I think most of the research on this bears this out, is that that's really the key question is not whose mind is going to get changed, because not many people's minds are going to get changed. There's not that many independents. There's not many people in the middle. It's who votes. Right. And most elections are about that anyway. Who gets the votes out? Who gets their
vote out?
Right. Who gets people to the polls on that day, or as it is now, mails them in or gets down the month before, whatever it takes. And the campaigns know this, and that's why there's going to be a lot of negativity, because that's how you sort of drive down. Ted Cruz, is he going to vote for Hillary Clinton? I doubt it. The question is, would he be inspired to vote for Trump or just stay home? And Ted Cruz and his supporters. And I would suspect that there's a lot more evangelical Ted Cruz type people in the Republican Party than there are diehard Bernie fans in the Democratic Party. And I don't know that for sure, but that's my suspicion. And so the question is, how many of those people on either side, and it's really not just the Ted Cruz wing. It's not the right, the sort of evangelical right. It's the moderate Republicans, the six of them that are left. And
John Kasich.
Well, Kasich, yeah, he didn't want to come to Bloomberg. You know, these people. So there's a question with them too. I would think in that respect, Clinton has the advantage because I don't think that there – again, I'm just speculating here, but I don't think there's as many people in the Democratic Party who think that she's as dangerous as some people in the Republican Party think about Trump.
Well, and the other thing too, with Cruz having given his famed speech in Cleveland, vote your conscience, whatever, but clearly that was – Trump's letting him have that platform was a way that, Trump calculated would unify people to Donald Trump. But at the same time, it was an open invitation to the fact that he's going to run again, and Cruz is going to run again in 4 years.
Oh, well, yeah, there's no doubt. He's already running. This is sort of a bet on his part that either Trump loses badly and then he can pick up the pieces, or Trump wins and does badly, and then he can pick up the piece. Now, if Trump gets elected and becomes, the next Ronald Reagan, and everybody loves him, and it's peace and prosperity, and he gets reelected.
It's morning in America.
Yes, it may be, whatever time it is now in America. And, but it was actually probably a smart idea on his part to put Cruz up there, even though Cruz is he's a calculating and ambitious politician, but that doesn't really, I don't know, it might be redundant.
That's an understatement. but as I talked to Michael Golden earlier, too, about the issue of, when you see conventions end, it's all supposed to be the kumbaya moment and, go back home and you're going to work the grassroots and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just... Again, this is such an unusual year that I don't know that you're going to see it. There isn't the fervor there that you normally have because of the divisions that exist in both parties.
Yeah, and certainly Clinton doesn't generate a lot of fervor.
Or Tim Kaine.
Yeah, the vice presidential pick, that's interesting for about 20 minutes, and then they can
do... It's a great convention story.
Yeah, right, and it's sort of like the Hippocratic Oath, right? First do no harm,
right.
And if that is okay, then I think both candidates picked somebody that wasn't going to do them any harm necessarily, although Trump probably missed an opportunity to reach out to others. He reached out to the base with Pence, and as opposed to reaching out beyond the base. And maybe that was a smart thing to do. I don't know.
Well, it might be a reflection, too, of you had an uncertain base with him.
Yes.
Trump has his own base, but for the Republican Party, mm-hmm. that's not exactly an intersection here that Pence kind of creates.
Yeah.
Chris Mooney, Director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois, thank you so much for getting up with me this morning, as always, and appreciate the work that the Institute does and your colleagues there as well, and always welcome to have a seat here on the Sunday Spin.
Great. Thanks a lot, Rick.
We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, Tony Arnold, political reporter at WBEZ-FM Chicago and Illinois Public Radio, my good friend Michael Golden, author of Unlock Congress, and Chris Mooney, the director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening.